It's time for Cofield and Company on a Football Friday. Live from the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
On this Friday, Cofield and Company, Stu Cofield in Chicago. The fellas are over at the Golden Nugget, Adam Candy and Mark McMillan on a Football Friday, and Adam Hill all at once. How are you guys?
Doing good, man. So far, so good, man. We're missing you out here. What's going on?
Nice and cool here. It's like 72 degrees, getting ready for a football game tomorrow. UNLV taking on Northwestern. So we'll get into that game a little bit as the show moves along. What's cooking there? Is it the normal craziness around 3 o'clock at the Golden Nugget, or is it going to heat up around 5?
First of all, you can tell that Mark is new because nobody actually misses you. We're incredibly thrilled that you're not here.
To make him feel good since he was gone. You know what I'm saying?
We're past that. We don't do that stuff anymore.
So no more sugarcoating?
Yeah. No, as you know, Steve, like right now, we know how it's very nice. People are walking around. They're having a good time. They're enjoying the start of their weekend. In about an hour and a half, we are going to see just insanity. The drunker people get down here, the better it gets for us because it's going to be wild. Angel will probably have to tackle somebody. We know how that goes. We're down here, you know, by the pool. We've got people hanging out. We got people wearing things they shouldn't be wearing, as always. It's a good time. Good time.
All right, Ari, let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
All right, we got Raiders news coming up, or at least rumors, in just a couple minutes. And, of course, a recap of Thursday Night Football on the way. But we start out, Mark. This is something near and dear to you because you played with a lot of these guys and against a lot of these guys who are being nominated for the Hall of Fame. I saw that the 2020 list is out now for Hall of Fame nominees for the NFL.
Yeah, that's a good list that's out, man. But obviously, I'm a little biased. And I was talking to Eric Allen. His name has been on the ballot for a while. Seth Joyner's name has been on the ballot for a while as well. Two former Eagles that had an opportunity to play for. And Eric kind of, you know, enlightened me on a little bit because those guys are Buddy Ryan guys. And if you know anything about Buddy Ryan back in the day, he didn't like the media. He didn't care about anybody. No one liked the Eagles. And I think, you know, in with Eric Allen saying that probably hurt those guys as far as getting in today because everybody considered us as dirty players and nobody liked us. So when you go to vote for guys like Eric Allen, a Seth Joyner, a Clyde Simmons, you know, those kind of guys should be in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, Reggie White is the first guy from the Buddy era to make it into the Hall of Fame, but Reggie was a different kind of guy. He was a more likable kind of guy. The other guys, it was just a different kind of beast. We talk about Dirty Waters and Wes Hopkins and those guys as well.
First-time eligible candidates are Troy Polamalu, Patrick Willis. Guys who were close last year who didn't get enough support were Isaac Bruce and Edgerrin James,
right.
Alan Faneca, Baselli, Hutchinson, Richard Seymour, John Lynch.
I'm a little salty my name is not on that list right now.
Do you hear any names in that list from Bruce and Edgerrin James and Faneca and Seymour or Lynch? Any names on that list that are big snubs?
Isaac Bruce pops out first. Edgerrin James had a great career, but Isaac Bruce is a guy that had an opportunity to go against several times playing against the 49ers and with Kansas City. He was probably one of the best route runners, pure route runners in the game. And he wasn't a boisterous guy. He just went out and did his job. His name, you know, his nickname in the league was the Preacher's Man. So he didn't brag about himself or anything like that. But if you look at the numbers that he was able to put up over his career with the Rams and also winning Super Bowls, he should be in the Hall of Fame. But like I said, they're going to expand it this year to 20 guys getting in. So hopefully he'll be one of those guys to get in. Also, Troy Polamalu is one of the great safeties that had an opportunity to play against him as well, with a great motor, played with the Steelers for a while, was a heart and soul of that defense, put it all on the line. And guys like that, I think deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. And it doesn't matter if you didn't win a Super Bowl or not. Obviously, with Randall Cunningham's name being up there again, I know that the knock on him is he never won a Super Bowl, but neither did Warren Moon, and Warren Moon is in the Hall of Fame.
It's always weird to me. I think it's an age thing maybe that you see names now. When I was growing up, I would hear these names of guys that are in the Hall of Fame, and they were almost larger than life. They were bigger than I could have ever imagined. Like, wow, these guys were amazing. Mm-hmm. And now that it's guys that I've seen play, I saw them in college, and then I saw them in their NFL career, and I'm like, yeah, that guy was really good. I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame guy. But I think it's just because of the era. Like, it's because I saw their whole career. They're not these unimaginable figures that it was growing up that I never would have seen play, and I just thought they were way better than they actually were. It's just it's a weird thing to me, and I don't know if that's just me or if that's how a lot of people feel, but it is strange. Some of these guys where I'm like, yeah, that guy was really good. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I probably would have felt that about some of the guys of the past that I just didn't – I never saw play.
And I think that's a lot of people feel that way as well. You know, you can judge a guy, obviously, by the way you see him play. Like, you know, he has good numbers. He's a really good player. But when you talk about Walter Payton or Jim Brown or certain guys, you know, Gale Sayers, like guys like that, you're like, wow, that was Gale Sayers.
Yeah. Like, in my mind, Jim Brown never got tackled. Right. Like, ever in his life, he never got tackled. And he just would – every single time he ran the ball, he scored a touchdown. Like, of course he's in the Hall of Fame. That's how good he was. But I'm sure he was amazing. But I'm sure he got tackled before and he tripped over – you know, he tripped over his own feet at some time in the backfield. I'm sure those things happened. But it's just I wasn't there to see it. I never watched it.
So a current-day team that feels like it's not going to have any Hall of Famers is the Miami Dolphins. Although I think people are freaking out a little bit.
They're trying to get out of
early,
Miami.
A little bit early right now. Yeah, what do you guys make of the request by Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's been in the league for a year, to get out of town in Miami? I don't know about the football player's take and Mark McMillan, but I, as an onlooker, think it's kind of ridiculous. This early in your career, now you're asking for a trade because you got off to a bad start. One game into the season?
And I'm a big fan of Fitzpatrick. Obviously, he's an Alabama guy. He ended up breaking my record in Alabama. But when you only played 1 year, I think it's real selfish, you know, for him to come out and say that he wants to be released from his contract. Just play your deal out. They're paying him a ton of money. He's a really good player. You're in the National Football League. There's a lot of guys out there sitting at home wish they was in his position. That would probably play for a lot less. You know, everybody's going to have an opportunity to be, you know, if you play long enough in the National Football League, you're going to be on some bad teams. Yeah. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, I was in New Orleans. We had a really bad team. Jim Mora actually walked out on us and quit, you know, like week five or week six. And, you know, we just stuck it out. Guys wasn't trying to jump ship. And I just think it's a little premature. But that's just the way these guys think now, man. You give these guys a lot of money. And, you know, obviously with AB and his antics, everybody thinks they can do that now.
Adam Hill, Adam Candy, Mark McMillan hanging out down at the Golden Nugget Cofield here in Chicago. Adam, have you heard anything about the Raiders having some interest in Fitzpatrick? Which, by the way, most of the whispers around Fitzpatrick, a former first-round pick, are that he'll fetch a second or third, which, again, suggests to me don't trade him, but if the Dolphins are going to be cooperative, the Raiders involved?
I mean, they should be. They tried out a bunch of guys yesterday, brought in just a depth guy today. That, you know, to add to the secondary with some issues there, obviously with Abram out for the year. Conley looks like he's going to be back in play and all those things. But, I mean, my thought on that is, shouldn't guys look out for themselves? I mean, careers are very short. And there was a day when, hey, you had loyalty and you know, if you signed a contract, you stuck to it and everything else. Players are getting some power back, and I think it's a good thing.
It's one game.
Yep, it's not one game. It's an entire offseason where you could see this coming, though.
Oh, stop.
They're trying to lose.
I listened to your point. Stop.
If you're rebuilding, you're not trading a recent first-round pick. He's part of the rebuild.
Right.
You know what? If they want to say that, that's fine. But you're saying, should he be asking that? Can he be asking that? I don't know when we get to the point where we say, well, he's been in the league 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Now he's earned the gold star card where he can say that he wants out. I don't know what amount of suffering is supposed to be the right amount of suffering for this young player. I understand how it might be viewed from the outside, but he can see they're tanking just as much as everybody else can see they're tanking. This Dolphins team is a different animal from what we've seen in the past.
And I was going to say, and yet I still play the over and want to play it again, over 4.5 and over 3.5. So I'm confident they're not anywhere as bad as they looked in week number one. I want to get to the Panthers real quick here because we got a lot to get to today on this Friday show, this Football Friday show live at the Golden Nugget here in the Windy City. What did you guys make of the game last night? Panthers lose. The offense moved between the 20s, but they couldn't score. Cam threw for a lot of yards, but, man, I thought Cam – in terms of some of the misses and even some of the strength on the makes, did not look good in terms of arm skill. Is he all the way back, Mark?
I don't think he's all the way back, physically and mentally. You know, he says a lot of stuff at the podium, but when you look at the way he's been regressing over the last couple of years with all the injuries that he's been suffering, He's a big guy. You know, he's been running a lot during his early career, but now all the injuries are now starting to catch up with him. And, you know, you see last week what they with them giving Christian McCaffrey the bulk of the load last week. And then you look at last night, and I think Christian, he didn't even have 100 yards total offense. So they put a lot on him, but he didn't come through. And, you know, it's kind of sad to see the guy regress. He's been trying. He's been trying new outfits. He's been trying new hairdos. nothing is working for him. But obviously he's not 100% healthy. If Cam Newton can't get you 1 yard on a quarterback sneak, then you need to address your offensive line.
So I'm curious, Mark, because I watched Cam Newton these first 2 weeks, and it reminds me of a pitcher in baseball who used to rely on his fastball, and now the fastball's gone, and he's got to figure out another way to get batters out, because if Cam Newton can't run, then his whole game changes. The whole Carolina offense changes. What happens there when a guy has to figure out how to make the best of what he's got left?
Well, you see it in basketball all the time. You know, Jordan wasn't the high flyer anymore. What you see at the, you know, change his game down to the back down game, and Kobe Bryant did the same thing. So Cam's going to have to figure out a way to be effective without running the ball. And if that's staying in the pocket, you know, delivering the ball, you know, maybe they should help him out, give him some easier throws or something like that. But it's just not looking good. Some of his balls were like, man, it was really bad.
Can he figure out that way? I mean, he's going to have to.
Right.
Does he have a fallback option? Can he adjust his game? Is there something that is a, you know, fadeaway jumper, a back down that players evolve with in basketball? What is the NFL version of that? Because I don't know what it is for Cam.
Like I said, I always use Randall Cunningham as an example. You know, later on in his career, he wasn't able to run as effective as he was early in the career. And then he goes to Minnesota and put up monster numbers. Obviously, he had Chris Carter, Jake Reed, Randy Moss to throw the ball to. But there's something that Cam Newton is missing out on. And hopefully they can, you know, fix that, or the Carolina Panthers are going to go nowhere.
What do you guys think of some of the late officiating? Was that the right call on the goal line or near the goal line with McCaffrey? And Adam Hill, I'll ask you specifically, since you're the referee whisperer, what do you think of the pass interference challenge that essentially turned into illegal contact that they really couldn't mess with?
Yeah, and that's the issue, right? We talk about this all the time. When you start making a lot of things reviewable but not everything, so they throw the challenge, essentially, if you weren't watching, they throw the challenge for pass interference. Basically what happened is the referees looked at it and said, oh boy, it's illegal contact, but it's not pass interference because the ball wasn't out yet, but we can't review illegal contact. So we have to stick with the call that's there. Now, Mike Pereira in the booth was saying, hey, listen, you're looking at this, you realize that it's illegal contact, you just call the pass interference and just say, hey, it was close enough, that's what we're going to go with, because the penalty should have been called out on the field. But that's not really what their directive is as officials. That's when they get in this huge conundrum. We talk about it in basketball too, where they don't let them review certain things, and they look at the monitor and they say, okay, I should have called a foul, I didn't, but it did go off on this team, so I have to give them the ball. Like, if you're not allowing everything to be reviewable, that's the situation you're stuck in, and it makes them look silly, and everybody's laughing about them today. You're reading all the blogs and everything else, but the referees did what they were supposed to do. And then on the McCaffrey play, they got the right call as well. People are like, he stretched a ball out, but he didn't do it. The ball crossed the plane out of bounds. They're thinking of the rule at the pylon, not out on the field. So it's also all these people that think they know better than the refs that don't. And in this case, I think the refs did a fairly good job. It just took a long time, and it was on national TV, so people noticed it.
All right, guys, quick break here. We're at the Golden Nugget. We're hanging out in Chicago, at least I am. We'll have some UNLV talk in the middle of the show. We should update people. Starting running back for Northwestern, Isaiah Bowser is actually out of the game. That was announced late last night. So they're without their starting quarterback. They're without their starting running back. So this is really interesting, and we'll hit on the UNLV game with Mark McMillan around 3:45. Candy and Adam Hill and Mark are down at the Golden Nugget. We come back, we'll get into the situation, the latest deal with Antonio Brown and how he's going to blend in with the Patriots and what the NFL is going to do going into this weekend, if anything.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
When you're fashionable and cool and handsome, it blinds us. Cam Newton can't throw the ball accurately. He's a quarterback. He's lost 8 straight starts, 4 straight games without a touchdown. With two good receivers and a star running back, people can't see it. They're blinded by it.
Let's head back downtown to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, for Football Friday with former NFL player Mark McMillan on Cofield and Company.
We are down here on a Football Friday, Cofield and Company at the Golden Nugget. Steve Cofield in Chicago with UNLV getting ready to take on Northwestern tomorrow on the gridiron. The Adams family has welcomed in Mark McMillan here as we take over the middle of the show here. And a lot of NFL to get to. Adam, what you look like you have something to say.
I do. I don't know if this is Ari, because we trash Ari a lot. But I don't know if he's picking the music right now.
That's Tupac. I like that Tupac.
I get around now, and we started the show, I believe it was How Do You Want It, which was more Tupac with Casey and JoJo, one of my favorite songs of all time. Like, we're killing it right now with the music, Ari.
I like it. Good work. Thank you. Adam.
And above and beyond that, I mean, I have not seen an instant reaction from Mark McMillan. Like, the way he started dancing when that song came on. Mark was down with that as soon as it came through.
Man. Tupac, man. Tupac lives on, man.
That's right.
Lives on through Ari, that's for sure.
Wait, by the way, it just popped my mind, though. September 13th, this is the day, right? So this is the anniversary of the death from 96.
Here in Vegas.
Yeah.
We got all the relevant stuff going on here.
I've talked about it before. I was at the hospital. I was keeping vigil. I was a high school senior. I mean, the nerdiest of nerds. But
Has that changed?
Keeping vigil for my guy Tupac in the hospital.
are you still the nerdiest of nerds?
Of course. Yeah. I'm saying back then. I wouldn't do that now, though. Like, I've been soured on celebrity, I think, to the point that I wouldn't do something like that. But, yeah, certainly high school me was down at the hospital keeping vigil.
All right. Well, we know you're sour on just about everything. After having to cover Antonio Brown for basically six straight weeks.
That's my guy.
Man. I figured you might be sour on it, but we're still going to talk a little more Antonio Brown here as the official word comes down from the National Football League in the New York office that Antonio Brown is not going to be placed on the commissioner's exempt list at this point. Now, it's a move that had been made for players who previously faced criminal allegations. This situation with Antonio Brown, the most recent one, I should say, deals with a civil case alleging sexual assault against Antonio Brown. Bill Belichick did not commit one way or the other.
Bill ain't going
to
say that.
Well, as to whether he was playing, I am here to bring the facts to the people. You can certainly add the spin to it. So, guys, I'll start with you, Mark. I didn't expect that Antonio Brown was going to end up on the commissioner's exempt list. Are you surprised at all, or is this kind of how you thought this would play out?
I'm not surprised at all. Like you said, it's not a criminal case, so according to the NFL rules and the way it's playing out, you know, you can't put him on the list. He's got to play. So he'll be suiting up against the Miami Dolphins this weekend. It's going to be exciting. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be tuned in. I'm sure Tom Brady is happy that he has another toy to play with out there on the football field. But like I said, I'm not a judge, but, you know, these are just allegations. And from some of the video I saw, they were real friendly in the bed. And, you know, if you're having whoopee with your trainer and then all of a sudden, you know, she comes crying wolf, you know, it's going to be a difficult situation for both of them. Like I said, I'm not a judge, but if you're out there sleeping with the lady that's supposed to be getting your hamstrings right, you opened yourself up for a whole another battle.
I mean, we have spent so long in sort of, like, I guess frustration, but not really anger or anything like that, at the whole Antonio Brown situation, because so much of it seemed silly, right? From the outside, when we looked at it, we're like, listen, man, this weird injury with the frostbite on the feet, the helmet situation that I don't think a lot of people really related to, and now we're into the real stuff, right? Whether it's criminal or whether it's civil, now it's stuff that we look at in a completely different light, Adam, and I'm just kind of wondering if perception-wise, because the NFL has been so inconsistent with these things in the past, if this becomes a precedent for things moving forward.
What precedent? They've never cared about precedent. They have no idea what precedent even means at the NFL office. We've said this time and time again, and I'm sorry to those who, you know, have heard us say it a million times. The NFL should not be doing these things. They should not be in this business because they don't know what they're doing. They came out with that thing a couple years ago. Every instance, it's six games, no matter what. And then you're like, What about this? Well, that's three games. What about this? That's two. What about this? Well, that's eight. Oh, this is the whole year. But what happened to six games for everything? What happened to just when it came out? Like, now when are you going to apply this? When it's when there's a conviction? When there's an allegation? When are you going to do it? Like, we have no idea. So there's no precedent for anything. They have no idea about setting precedent for anything. It's just a complete mess when the NFL tries to get involved with these things. I'm glad that they're not doing anything right now about Antonio Brown. I'm glad that they can sit there and not put him on the commissioner's exempt list, because you don't want to set a precedent where, and again, I say precedent, but who knows what precedent means with the NFL, but you don't want to get involved with, hey, if there's an allegation and a lawsuit is filed, then you're suspended. Well, then what's to stop a fan from another team from throwing an allegation out there and suspending somebody?
Then that's the tricky part, though, because you look at the workplace, right? There are certain workplaces where once an allegation comes out, once someone just makes the claim, you put them on paid leave, right? Some government situations, police, things like that, where there's just a credible claim, right? So when the NFL decides to get involved or not get involved, then it's judging the credibility of the claim.
Of course.
And there needs to just be a consistency to say either it's criminal or it's not. Do we get involved or do we not? But of course, that is not what's been happening, right? That is not what we've seen out of the NFL.
Never. And there's no rhyme or reason to anything they do. I'm glad that they're handling this in a kind of a wait-and-see approach, and they're going to figure it out and see if it goes another level, if there is some sort of – because now the police are going to be involved as well. The NFL is going to do their own investigation. This is going to go to another level.
Yeah.
And if stuff is found and if there is – because, again, you were talking about the fact that they may have had a relationship, or it looks like they did have a relationship based on photos, but one of her allegations was the fact that, you know, she was basically not paying attention and he did something to her when she wasn't even aware of it, and then he emailed her and said that he did it. So we have that. So who knows what's going on? I'm glad the NFL is going to wait and see. We'll see how it turns out. But for right now, I don't think the league should be taking any action at all.
It's time to hit What's Trending, brought to you by Born and Raised Sports Bar and Tavern in Las Vegas and Henderson.
The aces of the WNBA start the playoffs this Sunday against the Chicago Sky at the Thomas and Mack. Sky coach James Wade was the league coach of the year. Pregame 1:30 tip at 2 o'clock on 9:20 the game. For the Rams, safety Eric Weddle expected to play on Sunday in the home opener against New Orleans. Weddle in concussion protocol all week after being kneed in the dome by Christian McCaffrey. You can catch the Rams and the Saints right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Pregame 12:30 and kickoff goes down at 1:25.
Panthers need a touchdown. Newton, pass caught, short of the first down. They fake the toss. McCaffrey, depends where they put it. What a play by Hargraves out on the edge, and he did not get it.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
Golden Nugget on a Football Friday. Candy Hill, McMillan, Cofield is in Chicago. And we hope you can get down here and come say hi to us. We're right outside the pool area at the Golden Nugget. The book, of course, is ready for all your college and pro action outside the Cadillac restaurant. They're taking care of us over here. And we are going to keep going with some NFL talk, and this is a story that I have to be honest, guys, this one is near and dear to my heart because I am still a Giants fan who has not let go of Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, let it go, man.
Now, I'm not really there yet. Odell Beckham Jr., to me, he's not really gone. I just haven't accepted that the breakup has happened.
He's gone.
And apparently he is. So Odell Beckham Jr. getting ready to go with the Browns up against the Jets on Monday night in week two. And, of course, the Jets have Greg Williams, he of the Cleveland Browns, on the sidelines leading the defense. And Odell Beckham Jr. was not shy. He's never shy. But he was not shy this week in talking about the fact that Greg Williams had his players, in his estimation, going out to try to injure him. And I remember very clearly that preseason game with the Browns and the Giants a couple of years ago, where, as a biased fan, it certainly looked to me like the ankles of Odell Beckham Jr. were being targeted. He said that high ankle sprain contributed to him eventually breaking his leg that season. He said his career hasn't ultimately been the same since that point. And since we have an NFL defensive back sitting with us here who can probably give the best opinion of anyone. Well, that's why you're the best person to talk about that. I'm not even going to get into the stuff about playing for Buddy Ryan quite yet. I'll just say, as you've seen the play. You've seen what the Browns did against Odell Beckham Jr.
Right.
Did anything jump out at you as anything out of the ordinary when you saw that?
I don't think anything out of the ordinary. It's a football game. It's a fast-paced moving game. It's preseason. Guys are still trying to make the football team, and it was a football play. And, you know, with the way the game is played now, you can't hit a guy up high. If you hit a guy up high, you're going to be fine. You're going to get possibly kicked out of the game. If you hit a guy low, now all of a sudden, you know, there's fines now. So it's like, where do you really hit a guy at? And obviously, if a guy's going to be popping off, he's going to be able to accept to, you know, guys putting that little marker on him. And that's just the way it is as a defensive back. And, you know, no wide receiver likes to get hit low. And that's just the nature of the beast. But if a defensive back, pretty much I would say like 80% of my tackles, maybe 90% of my tackles were low. And that was just the way I was able to bring guys down that was bigger than me.
You played for a legendary coach. When we talk about Buddy Ryan, it's one of those names that jumps out in the lexicon of defense in the NFL. I am not going to ask you to sell out anybody in your locker room to say anything about Buddy Ryan. Was there ever any incentive for anyone? Let's just put it that way.
I wouldn't say it was an incentive for anyone. That was just the nature, the way we played the game. Back then, you know, the NFC East was a bloodbath. It was the Giants. It was the Redskins. It was the Cowboys. It was the Eagles. It was Buddy Ryan's defense. It was just the way that we played the game. There was no bounty out on guys. I know guys said that we had a bounty out on the kicker. I think it was Zendejas when he got, you know, I think Andre Waters took out the kicker one time for the Cowboys, and a lot of people got upset with that. And it was just the way we played the game. And nowadays you can't play the game like that. But for him to come out and call out the coach like that and say he's a dirty player, I saw a lot of you know, his former players, Jonathan Vilma, came out and, you know, had Greg Williams is back. And, you know, you don't want to go out there and injure a player, but, you know, you're also trying to oppose your will and try to do whatever you can. Obviously, they were in his head already.
Oh, there's no question that Odell Beckham Jr. is going to have eyes not only on the football, but definitely on the defensive backs. And you talk about Greg Williams being attacked, and Greg Williams did not take it laying down. Greg Williams fired right back.
As he should. And like I said, he, you know, obviously Odell was Odell. And for him to come out and say something like that, obviously he has a lot more worried about than beating the Jets. If
Greg Williams did not handle this question properly. Let's hear what he had to say.
We don't do that. I've never done that anywhere I've been. We don't do anything to hurt the team. It's the number one primary thing. If you're committing penalties, you're doing those type of stuff, we just don't do it. And, you know, and you guys are cooperating, giving him attention. Just don't give him attention, you know. And it just is what it is.
Is it discouraging on some level, though? He's one of the most dynamic players in the league for him to even.
That's your opinion?
He's one of the best.
What's New York's opinion? The Giants' opinion. What did the Giants do? Don't. So that's not a question for me.
They're not They're not cheering for us. They should be. Let's be honest. They could be cheering.
That sounds like
us.
Eagles fans.
They are cheering for a wedding walking past us at the Golden Nugget. This is live radio, folks. Live radio at the Golden Nugget. So we hear there, guys, from Greg Williams. Adam, you are familiar with the Greg Williams experience from his time with the Buffalo Bills.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, first of all, you can just hear any time a coach starts going, whoa, 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 like, you know that he's trying to think of a lie. And he also, they're saying, hey, he's one of the most dynamic players in the league. He's like, ask the Giants, do they think so? Yeah, they do. They do think so. They don't want to trade him. They got in a position where they kind of had to get rid of him.
Oh,
so,
I don't know that they had to, but they made their own choice there.
But here's the thing. He starts that whole thing with, that's not something we do. He was literally suspended indefinitely for doing that. He did that. He had a bounty program in New Orleans. He did that. Oh, that's not something we ever do. Yes, it is. It is something you do. You did it. Do you remember not coaching? That's why? It's just ridiculous.
Well, that's why it's interesting that Mark brought up that it was Jonathan Vilma who jumps out there to defend Greg Williams, because he was at the heart of that as well, right along with Greg Williams.
And like I said, seeing his comments and him having him come back and support his old ball coach, obviously, you know, he has a a bad pass in the late, in the National Football League with paying guys to take guys out. And for Odell to even have that on a player's mind as a defensive player, I'm already in his head. And I'm sure Odell's going to go out there and try to have a great game. Obviously, the Jets doesn't have the best secondary. They don't have the greatest of defenses, so he should be able to be successful against the Jets. But some guys are going to go after him. They're going to go after him, and then obviously he's going to cry. He's going to probably throw his helmet off. He's going to complain if a guy tried to tackle him low. You know, he's going. That's just Odell.
I think the place that needs to be under the highest watch this weekend with Odell Beckham Jr., and we've seen this before. This game is going to be at the Meadowlands, right? This is going to be at the Meadowlands. So we've been on these sidelines at the Meadowlands, and the kicking nets are in danger. We need to understand that the equipment folks need to be on high alert for Odell Beckham going after the kicking nets when he gets frustrated. There's precedent for this. As a Giants fan, I would still like to have him back kicking nets all over the place. I don't really care about it. We're going to talk at 4 o'clock a bit more about how we think this Browns-Jets game is going to play out. Adam and I talked yesterday about the mono diagnosis for Sam Darnold. That's so Jets. But so Jets. When we come back, a little more UNLV football talk. What's in store for UNLV this weekend against Northwestern? Schofield and Company.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co. Hanging at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas for Football Friday. It's Cofield & Company.
Hey, I'm going to let Mark bring this one back in. I'm telling you, Ari is killing it back there with the music today here in Cofield & Company. We are out at the Golden Nugget. Steve is in a hotel somewhere in the greater Chicago area as UNLV football, 1-1 on the season, gets ready to take on the Northwestern Wildcats. We heard from Cofield earlier that starting running back for Northwestern not going to be available in this game. So, Mark, we were talking to you before the Arkansas State game last weekend. Yeah, man is right. there were not a whole lot of positives to take out of that game for UNLV. Of course, the big story that came out were questions about whether Armani Rogers was safe as the starting quarterback for UNLV. So whether we're talking about that or talking about this UNLV team overall, if you were coaching this team, where would you start to try to fix what you saw last week?
You got to start with your offensive line. You know, they didn't really give them a lot of protection up front. They didn't change the game plan on the defensive side of the ball. They tried to play the game with a three-man pass rush, and they were just gashing them. And then, you know, you think you're going to come out at halftime and make adjustments. They stayed with the same defense. And they stayed with the same quarterback. And I guess I left, and then that's when, they scored the last couple of points. But if you're going to make a change, obviously you got to make it a little sooner at the quarterback position. And the wide receivers have to be held accountable, too, because they dropped a lot of easy balls in that first half. And as a quarterback, if you see your main guys dropping balls, that's not good for your confidence. And it struggled. He struggled through the whole game. And they got a tough decision to make. You know, how long are you going to stay with this young man at the quarterback position? We had Randall on the show Tuesday, and he's a big fan of this young man. He just says they need to get help around this young man and try to help him out with some easier throws, better protection up front. You know, he wasn't able to use his legs, and I think he's a guy that needs to run and be mobile and be able to use his legs. That will open up a little bit more. And we talked about Cam Newton earlier, about him being mobile in his earlier career, and he's able to make a lot of plays. Having this young man sit in the pocket is not his strong suit.
That's the part, Mark, that really gets me about this, because I understand the frustration from Tony Sanchez's perspective, right? You want your quarterback to be able to throw the ball. That's not revolutionary. You brought in Armani Rogers knowing that his strength is not throwing the ball. His strength is his legs and his ability to make plays. And so to talk about at this point, two games into the season, when you've had a whole offseason of knowing that you needed to develop Armani Rogers as a thrower, if you're going to blame him now for not being able to throw the ball, well, that's not what he does well. And to me, it feels like the best opportunity, Adam, for the UNLV offense, the best opportunity is Armani Rogers still running the ball, running an option, being able to use his legs. If you're going to slag him for not being a passer, that's more on you than it is on him.
Right, but he's got to do everything. So, yes, they brought him in to be a runner. He's used his legs very effectively throughout his career, but he's also got a very, very strong arm, and their hope was bringing him in, you can harness that strong arm, make it a more consistent arm, turn him into a real dual threat. And there was people when he came in saying, hey, if this guy continues to develop and gets more accurate, gets more touch, gets more consistency in his arm, he's a potential first-round pick in the NFL. Now, it just hasn't happened with his arm, and I do think there's a part of them that wants to harness his legs a little bit in order to make sure he's healthy, because there's a lot of concern of what happened last year when he wasn't on the field, when he wasn't healthy, and things kind of went south a little bit. So I don't think they want him to run all over the place, because they want to make sure that he stays on the field. But at some point, you do have to let him do what he does best and let him just make plays out there. And there just hasn't been the opportunities. Now, I'll also say, I think Armani Rogers' ability on the field is also what opens up a lot of running lanes for the running backs, because people never give quarterbacks enough credit for that when they are, you know, when they are a threat to run the ball, that they spread the defense out more and they allow running. Like, look how good the running game has been with Armani Rogers there throughout the years.
Yeah.
That's not just the offensive line. That is the threat that he can do damage as well with his legs. So him being on the field does help the running backs. It helps open up the offense in other ways. It is on him. Like Tony Sanchez said, it's on him. He's got to get more consistent as a passer. But they've also got to put him in better positions to succeed.
Agreed. I think there's responsibility on everybody. Armani Rogers went 8 for 23, 42 yards, and an interception.
It was awful.
And those are numbers that are not all that different from what he had last year against this same Arkansas State team. So here's the question that I have, Mark. If you're a defensive back and you're playing against a guy like an Armani Rogers, where you know the legs are a threat, but they want to try to force the pass as they did against Arkansas State because they knew that's where the weakness was
right
in the Arkansas State defense. But if you're a defensive back and you see a running quarterback like Armani Rogers in the pocket, are you relieved at all that you don't have to worry about the threat of him running as much?
It changes the whole game plan. You know, obviously, I'm sure they practiced all week about him being mobile, having their outside in rushers guys, keep him in the pocket, keep him contained. Don't lose your containment. As a defensive back, when you're playing against a running mobile quarterback, you have to guard a little bit longer. And all of a sudden, you see the guy sitting back in the pocket and they didn't make any adjustments. As a defensive back, I'm excited. I'm like, wow, they're limiting his ability as far as his athletic ability. And like I said, he's a running mobile quarterback. And that's what he is. So why not use his abilities to the best that he can to open up more avenues for the offense?
And that's ultimately what this boils down to for me, guys, because we talk about how Bill Belichick can adjust his personnel to do what he needs to do against different teams each week. And not every coach and not every team has the ability to do that. UNLV can't just switch from being a running team to a passing team on any given
week. Like you said, they had the whole offseason.
If that's what you wanted to do, you had a whole offseason in terms of that accuracy to make Armani Rogers a better quarterback. I don't think putting Kenyon Oblad into the offense in the third game of the season is going to improve UNLV's chances of winning.
No, I don't think. And if they thought that it was, they would have done that. Like, they would have said, okay, we're going to go with him, and we saw all offseason that he can do this as a passer, and he's a consistent passer, and he's going to help move our offense. If they thought that that was going to help, they would have done that. They don't believe that he's ready to step in and be the full-time quarterback. They don't. Now, I know that I've heard people yell and scream, well, oh, you fall behind, you put him in there to try to throw because you think he's a better thrower. Well, that's also when the defense isn't prepared for another guy. You can go in there and you can have a different look from the defense and set it up so there's more openings for what he wants to do throwing the ball. So there's a lot that goes into that I don't think people really fully grasp. And there's not enough people that are actually paying close attention to UNLV football to even understand what's going on out there. They just look at the numbers and they're like, oh, he sucks.
Right.
It's not really the case.
Well, and to the point you're talking about, Adam, if you're going to say about putting in Oblad, well, guess what? We saw Oblad at the end of the game last week. Now there actually is a little bit of film out there on Kenyon Oblad. If you're a defense, you now have seen this guy. You can at least, you're not going to spend all of your prep time on him, of course.
No.
But you are familiar with the fact that he exists, and it's not going to shock you if he comes into the game at some point. So UNLV goes into this game at Northwestern as a 19-point underdog. Adam, quickly from the betting perspective on this game, would you want anything to do with it?
It's a really, really tough spot. Now, I think they're in a better position having lost last week to be able to come out and say, hey, listen, if they were 2-0 and they were, you know, hot, you know, on their high horse and, like, excited and going in there, I would I don't know where they'd be. I also don't know where their mindset is, having thought, like, hey, we're 1-0. We're going to win a second game. We're going to have some momentum coming into this. Are they down on themselves? Because I know that Tony Sanchez was down. I know the couple players I talked to after the game were very down. It's going to be difficult to bounce back. I don't know where their mindset is enough coming off that game last week to know what kind of effort they're going to have. And I don't know how seriously Northwestern is taking the game. I don't want to lay these points for sure. I would lean toward taking the points and saying, hey, UNLV could stick around for a while. Northwestern does not have a dynamic offense. They're not some explosive team that's going to go out and, you know, go up on your 28-0 8 minutes into the game. I think they're a team that's going to want to run the ball. That, you know, we mentioned the running back is out, so it might be a little more difficult. They're going to want to run the ball, establish a run, play defense, and keep it a low-scoring game, and that's a lot of points to lay in that scenario.
And you talk about a low-scoring game. I'll just give you a stat that I saw in preparing yesterday. Pat Fitzgerald, since he got to Northwestern 2006 at home, as a home favorite, under 70% of the time, regardless of course, what the number is. So, Mark, I have a question for you about looking forward on the schedule here for this UNLV football team.
Man.
Yeah. maybe we don't even have to have a segment. We can just say that right there. The players know. The coaches know. That they can read a schedule the same way we can. Is there a point with a team that is facing a stretch like UNLV is at Northwestern, then they have a bye at Wyoming, home Boise State, at Vanderbilt, at Fresno State, home San Diego State. Is there a point where it starts to wear on you just because you know what's down the line?
As a player, as a college athlete, I don't think it bothers you as much as an NFL athlete, because these guys are on scholarship. So they're trying to do the best that they can to try to play on Sunday. But when you look at that stretch and you look at what Arkansas State was able to do, and these teams that they have to go up against, those teams are better than Arkansas State. So it's going to be real tough. You look at Boise State and what they're able to do. You look at San Diego State, who went in and beat UCLA. UCLA is not a really good team, but it's going to be tough. Wyoming with a big opening day win against the Southeastern Conference team. So their schedule is real tough. And if I'm a guy and I'm sitting there and I'm talking to my boys, I'm like, man, where are we going to get a win from? And how are we going to get a win? We don't even know who's really going to be our solidified quarterback.
How does a coaching staff deal with that? How do they – talk to the players about, like, not looking at those things and not doing it, because you know they're going to do it anyway. So if you just tell them, hey, don't think like that, don't get in their head, don't have that discussion, that's not going to work. How can they get the players to not think that way?
You just have to be positive, and obviously if the kids buy in, you have to buy into the program at first. You have to buy into what the coach is saying. If you don't buy into that, then all that stuff doesn't matter anyway. He can get up there and say the best speech of his life, but if you're not bought into the program, it doesn't matter what the guy says. And you know, it's going to be a tough stretch. And like I said, I like to see these guys do well. Obviously, they're the home team. But, you know, what they put out on the field last week was not acceptable.
No, and Tony Sanchez was clear about that in the postgame. Of course, he bears some responsibility. His players bear some responsibility. And the expectations from the administration have been made clear on Tony Sanchez this year. If they do not win six games and go to a bowl, it is not likely that he will return next year for UNLV, and right now it's Desiree Reed-Francois in charge of that decision. And the only reason I say right now is because the Twitter rumor mill has decided to fire up over this USC athletic director situation. We don't have anything hard evidence-wise to say that Desiree Reed-Francois is putting herself out there.
What do you mean? We have one tweet from somebody that mentioned her as a candidate.
Yeah, we
That's
do.
That's enough.
We have that, don't we? But we also have some... we have some odds from faraway places, believe it or not, as to who the next USC athletic director will be. I don't know how OJ made his way in at plus 100,000.
Oh, man. OJ's blowing up on Twitter, ain't he?
Yeah, the juice is definitely loose on Twitter at the moment. So
at least you know where he's at all times.
What about Felicity Huffman? She has a tie to USC.
I think she's going to be busy here.
For 2 weeks.
Her sentencing is coming up right now. For
14 days. She came
down
today.
Oh, it happened today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 14 days.
Bring in Nikki Woods. Keenan McCardo, somebody.
See, all sorts of options here. I don't think Matt Leinart's busy right now. So Adam, the Desiree Reed-Francois situation feels a little trumped up to me because of a couple of things. First of all, we haven't heard it from anywhere credible. Second of all, she's a UCLA alum. Like, the hardest sell I could possibly think of to the USC fan base is a UCLA alum with all
perfect.
The options they have out there.
Perfect.
Of course you think it's perfect. Trolling their own fan base, that's an Adam Hill special.
Perfect. I can't think of a better candidate. In fact, I would tell them to only look at UCLA alums as their next GM.
I don't know how well that would go. That's like somebody from Alabama going to be the AD at Auburn.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. And here we are, Mark. We're introducing the new athletic director of the University of Alabama, Cam Newton.
Bo Jackson. I actually was going back.
And forth
they might accept Bo though. Yeah. Bo's like
that's why I said it. I went for Cam because I figured it'd be a little more derisive than that. All right, when we come back, guys, we're going to talk about this weekend's NFL slate. We're going to talk about it from the picks perspective. We're going to run through the slate. We're going to put Mark on the hot seat. Mm. He's going to pick winners for you. You're going to take those winners straight down to the sportsbook this weekend. It's Cofield Company from here at the Golden Nugget on Friday afternoon.
Hit up Cofield & Company on Facebook, like ESPN Las Vegas.